Hallo und herzlich willkommen bei einer neuen Episode des Pirate Gaming Podcast. Wir sind 3 Tage lang für euch auf dem Living Games Festival in Bochum. In der Jahrhunderthalle dort findet ein ziemlich geniales Kulturfestival der Computerspiele statt. Es gibt verschiedene Awards zu Studentenprojekten, Schülerprojekten und auch den kulturell einflussreichsten Spielen der letzten 12 Monate. Das heißt, auch hier können wieder interessante Projekte sich bewerben und dort entsprechende Preise absahnen. Zum anderen kann man sich als Besucher auch diese Projekte selber anschauen und tatsächlich auch selber mal durchspielen, was ganz besonders spannend ist, denn am Freitag gab es direkt den Schüler-Lehrer-Tag. Das heißt, Schulklassen konnten sich auf der Veranstaltung umschauen und einen Einblick in die Spieleentwicklung kriegen bei verschiedenen Workshops. Gleichzeitig gab es eine Ausbildungsbörse, wo Interessierte sich schon mal mit dem Traumberuf Game Designer auseinandersetzen konnten und welche Ausbildungsmöglichkeiten es tatsächlich in und um die Gamesbranche herum gibt. Ganz besonders interessant, neben den ganzen Studentenprojekten waren auch einige Indie-Entwickler dort. Und einer von denen kam tatsächlich aus Schweden angereist und hat ein paar sehr interessante Informationen für uns mitgebracht. Es ist nämlich nicht immer ganz so einfach, wie man sich vielleicht als Indie-Entwickler vorstellt. Viele haben ja den Eindruck, unabhängig von irgendwelchen Publishern kann man wunderbar kreativ seine Projekte umsetzen, ohne dass einem irgendjemand dort reinredet. Aber in der Realität ist es dann doch häufig sehr viel schwieriger, als man sich das vielleicht vorstellt. Lars Hoes aus Schweden hat dort seine ganz eigenen Erfahrungen gemacht, hat mit XNA gearbeitet, diesem Framework von Microsoft, bei dem man ursprünglich auch auf Xbox Live Arcade draufgehen konnte. Und wir haben eine nette Talkrunde gemacht. Ich warne euch nur schon mal vor, die ist vollständig auf Englisch in dieser Episode. Und dort geht es unter anderem dann auch um das Verhältnis zwischen Game-Developern und Publishern. Und wir schauen ein wenig hinter die Kulissen, wie es wirklich bei Spieleproduktion ausschaut. Right, first day of this nice festival is nearing its end, and I'm very excited to have a guest from Sweden here, a member of the indie developer community. Lars, could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, I can. My name is Lars Hoes, and I work at an indie studio in Skövde, Sweden, called Trophies Games. And we released a title for Xbox 360, the indie game section there, back in 2008 November, called Colosseum, and we got to experience some of the troubles with Xbox Live Arcade and XNA in general making this game, and then also later on making more indie games and basically trying to figure out how the market works. And what we realized was that you can't always believe what people are telling you when you go and you talk, you send emails to people and they give you a little bit of information, but they always leave something out. So that in the end, you're basically, I don't know how to say it, they put thoughts in your head that are not really real. So they give you hopes, keep your hopes up. And then in the end, they don't fulfill those promises that they really, really never give promises, but sort of hopes. So in the end, you end up disappointed, and an XNA developer basically deciding to develop games for Microsoft's platform, which is a little bit sad, I think.
So there's been a lot of debate within the gaming industry, within the player community very much, and it was always about the same. On the one hand, we're having a very big copyright discussion here in Germany and in many other countries around the globe as well. On the other hand, there are many community members. I'm always reading several communities, so I know what the people are writing there. And it's usually a lack of sympathy that has developed towards the big publishers, because pretty much people are of the same opinion of what you were saying, that publishers often tend to promise certain things towards the actually creative studios, but not keeping these promises, but keeping
lots portions of the money for themselves. So as an indie developer, are you really that independent from this development on the market?
Well, of course not. And what you're always trying to do is your best with every game you make and what you want to make with it. But in the end, I've heard some stories also about indie developers who, when people come to them with money, they say, no, I don't do this for money. And that's truly an indie developer for me, if they just do it because they want to do it and don't really care about getting paid or not. But at the same time, who can live like that? Everybody needs money. And it's always hard to try to walk that fine line between being accepted in the indie community and making a game that everybody will play, making a game that people will pay for, and then actually trying to get it out on some platform and then try to decide which one. And so, of course, it's always it's a tough strategy to know what you want to do with your game, but it also always, usually as all games, start out with a thought of some creative mind and then ends up sooner or later on some rich guy's table, and then you never know what happens. Does that answer your question? I'm not really sure.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like you said, there's plenty of opportunities for indie developers. There are many different platforms out there right now that you don't have to build AAA games for, but also very attractive arcade games or casual games. All the mobile platforms like iOS, iPhone. You've made very specific experiences with XNA. Could you share a little bit of your personal impressions from working on that platform?
Well, like I said before, it was very nice making a game with that, because we did get a lot of help from the community forums and everything, and we managed to do great, great things with it. But in the end, again, it was we felt a little bit like it was somehow we were led on by the thought that XBLA Live Arcade would be our goal platform, and that never happened, obviously, because it's really hard to get in there. So what you have in the end is basically Microsoft with a bunch of developers knowing how to do XNA but nothing else. And, well, that's really great, because they have a little farm of developers that can do everything for them. But our whole indie company started also as we were really believing in the downloadable revolution, more or less. Downloading games, making it easy for... I mean, before that, there was no really... The only games you could get was in the store. So now you have a system with internet getting wider and everywhere, and the bandwidth, so you can download pretty much anything really fast. You have the opportunity to actually sell your game everywhere, but then you need somebody to take care of that, of course, and the big fishes in this game made sure how to get in there. So even though it's really hard to get, like, for instance, like you said, iPhone, you have to be like a one-hit wonder. I'm not really sure you can be more than maybe two-hit wonder or three-hit wonder. Is really, I don't think that exists on iPhone right now, actually. And same thing is on Facebook. Everybody's playing it, and then the people that got successful, they get noticed, and now you got the big companies coming in there too, like EA. So just did a football game, or have been working on a football game, released it the other day, and I think they just started this Facebook credits too, which would be nice for indie developers too. But as for now, only licensed developers can use this at Facebook, trying it out right now. So I think this might be a really good thing to have, like a unified currency on Facebook and basically all social forums, because we're in Germany now. You have StudiVZ here, and there's a lot of ambitions there too. You can make anything there too. But I don't know. Do you have games on StudiVZ? Can you pay for games there?
Not that I'm aware of. There are also in Germany Facebook games, but they have started to do some applications, actually. One of the standards that has been establishing is Open Social, their unified API that several networks are using right now. Xing, the business network, is using it as well. But no, I don't think they're doing paid applications right now.
All right, no, but either way, I think that this whole social phenomena about just friends meeting friends online definitely goes hand in hand with the future of game development, and definitely indie game development also, if it's only applications or just small games or whatever. And a global currency would be really nice, so that everybody, or that people wouldn't have to go in with their Visa card every time they need to pay for something, or like you talked before about donations. But it's really hard. We actually... tried to do that at Short Fist Games. We had a little page on our home site that was like, okay, so we're making this game now, and it would be really cool if you fans could join us in making this game. So here's the donation button. And, well, surprised to say, nobody paid till this day. So, but I mean, of course, how can you pay for a game you haven't played yet? I mean, what can we offer them? Also, if you pay 10 euros today, you might get a game in 2 years, you know? Doesn't work that way.
That's a pretty interesting topic as well. There's been a lot of debate on digital distribution, especially with the rise of platforms like Steam, which is highly popular right now, but it's still the same problem at the core. So on the one hand, you have the classical copyright, which works on the model of selling per unit. And there's been a lot of criticism recently because on the one hand, there is, of course, lots of file sharing out on the web, which you can't really put it in numbers because you don't know how many people who played these games do actually buy them afterwards and who don't. But in the end, it's probably most certain that it does hurt the developers, especially indie studios, because they don't have that much budget. And there's been an interesting movement here, at least here in Germany. I don't know how it's been in Sweden. The content industry has been campaigning massively here in Germany. They have created a term called Raubkopierer, so which is basically a step forward from the internationally used pirate. So it's more like a thief. In the recent years, there's been another movement which came more from the consumer side of things, which was pretty new up to then. And one of the reasons I said I'm excited to have you as a discussion partner right here is because you're from Sweden, and the entire movement started in your country. Pirate Party, exactly. Right now, we do have a gaming magazine, Pirate Gaming, here in Germany, but it all started actually in Sweden. And how did you perceive this entire debate? I mean, it was a phenomenon. They were the quickest growing party in the entire country. And the first time I heard about it, I thought it was ridiculous because all the media were writing about a file share political party, and was like, that can be a party? Is that all to it? And later on, I discovered there was more to it. But you as a developer, how do you evaluate the entire debate that was triggered?
Oh, very good question. I'm not sure I can answer it in a good way, but I don't know where to take this one. I think that just the Pirate Party in itself, like you said in the beginning when I listened to it too, it was I'm not really sure how can you have politics and mix that up. And I realized after a while that that's not all they do also. I mean, of course, they got some clever minds behind that too, and that's real politics they're doing. But for me, it's like we've all been working with Xbox and towards PS3 and stuff like that. So I really haven't felt the pirates breathing down our necks quite yet. And I think that basically, I mean, I don't know. I really can't tell you, man. I'm sorry.
Well, I'd say it's a little bit of extremes. We have another discussion partner sitting right here from the Media Design High School in Düsseldorf. I'm sure you have heard about the movement in Germany, haven't you?
Yeah, I have.
So what was your take regarding all this? I mean, you're one of the people who's studying game design right now, who's aiming at towards getting a job in the industry as indie developer or in a larger studio. In the end, selling units is part of your job. You need to get the money to survive. It's not like I'm doing this just for fun. But on the other side, content industry as well as Pirate Party, they have formed a little bit of two extremes during this entire discussion. Do you have any clue where this is going to lead us?
Well, I don't know, but as we talked about earlier, the indie game industry, how to make money out of our hobby, our life, and we talked about donations, and I recently figured about this Wolfire Indie Bundle, where you can donate money you can donate from $1 to infinity, and the money is evenly split about developers or some charity organization, and all is DRM free. And I think that's an interesting point, because you can pay $1 and then you can give those download links to all your friends, and they can download the game for free, and you only paid $1 for 5 awesome indie games. And I think that that's a very hard to predict thing, because you don't know how many guys do it. And well, they talked about it some weeks later about this indie game stuff, and they got a 25% of wearing this stuff because it's DRM free, and in spite of it only costs $1. I mean, it's nothing, and I really find it hard to predict how we'll end up.
Can be pretty different. I mean, we just heard that your product didn't really get any donations. That's the problem, I guess, with voluntary payment systems. On the other hand, like you said, Wolfire, they're producing Overgrowth right now, pretty interesting indie game, which to me almost looked like a AAA title in terms of quality. And World of Goo has done it before, and they did some market research as well. They did this as a limited offer, like pay as much as you want was the title. And they, I think it was for some anniversary or something, I don't know. Anyways, they actually made some market research to see how many people paid how much money. And they also asked people, why did you pay that much money? And it was quite interesting. While they had tremendous amount of people who just paid €1 with it, which is nothing, and which I think doesn't live up to the value of the actual game. I mean, World of Goo, let's be honest, it was great, wasn't it?
It depends on what kind of game it is, too, of course. I mean, how many people are making it, and how many people pay €1? Because if it's 100,000 people paying €1, it's still a lot of money. And if it's like 4 people making it, and even though they sat for a long time and it was their hobby project, it can still make them rich, you know? So it's all about the perspective, too. And I don't think you can really value a game saying that this is worth €10 and this is what I'm going to give it. That's what I want to say, give it. It's like going to movies. I don't think it's worth going to movies and pay €9. I think that's too much. I'd like to pay 5, but I can't do that there. So I think that would be a good way to do it with games, too. But I was thinking about pirate gaming just in general. It was also hard for us for music. It's really, I mean, what I think musical artists, if we're going to talk about that for a while, they should go out on tours. Because that's what musical artists do, in my eyes. They play for people, not on CD. And movies, a movie is best experienced in the cinema. Everybody knows that, too. So people are always going to go to concerts. People are always going to go to cinemas. When it comes to games, if you download a game, then you are, in a way, stealing it. And back in the day, I was always downloading for my chipped PS2. And after I got into game development myself, I started buying my games. And then I felt a lot more attachment to them somehow. And I think that, it's sort of... You have to. Games is in the danger of not being realized as its value. At the same time, as music is, like, if you buy for 50 cents a song, that song is not worth 50 cents. It's probably worth $1,000 or whatever. But you pay 50 cents for it because it's like the mass consumption thing. And with games, you can't really have that. So you either have to pay €60 or nothing at all. And of course, people would rather choose nothing at all. But, you know, here again comes to indie games, because all the publishers, like half of that cost for the €60 is that the publishers are taking, and all the boxes and everything. So if you could just download it and have an indie game or whatever and lose all the publishing, it would be a lot cheaper for the consumers too. And I don't know, maybe people need to be aware of, I think people are aware of how hard it is to make games, but you always have to know the worth of the culture you're consuming. I think is very important.
One very interesting theory I recently heard was also at Media Design High School, we had a former EA employee who's previously received all the pitched projects for EA Germany. And he said something quite interesting. Even though he was working at a publisher, he said, in my opinion, the pricing policy of the larger publishers is quite ridiculous. Like right now, Activision is pushing the prices extensively. Like they were quite strange, even towards the developers. Like you heard the story, they fired the two company leaders of what was the company name? Infinity Ward. Yeah, and then they generally raised all the prices to 60 euros, which is quite a lot. And the thing that this former EA employee said was, well, people may value the games, but at the same time, let's take a look at the focus target group. You have young people, students mostly, who apparently do not have that much money. Now, if you have one product that you really, really want, and it's worth 60 euros, you pay that one, you don't have any more money for other smaller games. Like he said, well, his idea was that possibly due to the extensive price range of computer games, that people tend to buy only the projects they like and appreciate the most, and leave out the smaller games because they say, well, they may be nice, but, well, I don't have that much money. I will spend it on the project I like the most. Is that something that appeared to you as well?
Well, again?
is that a situation that appeared to you as well in your community or to yourself?
Yeah, well, as a student, I don't have that much money, so and obviously the games are getting even more expensive. You know, in former times you could buy for 100 mark a game, and you're fine. And now it's 70 euros for a PS3 title, and the PC titles are growing with it, and the consoles are not you know, don't get any cheaper because. Yeah, well, it sells. So the manufacturers think, yeah, well, 70 euros, it sells, so we can raise the PC games as well. And so I don't have that choice and don't have that much money, so I think about how to spend it. And when I think about, 70 euros each game and, you know, maybe there are 3-4 titles each month which came out in the summer, and I can't finance each one because I can only choose from one or two, I think. So I have to decide.
Maybe in terms of production value, there was an interesting comparison between the movie Avatar and the game. Like, people nowadays say, well, on the one hand, the gaming industry is earning more money than Hollywood. On the other hand, big blockbuster titles are about the same amount of work as a AAA title. But as you already said, for music you have concerts, for movies you have cinema, and all these, all these primary channels are left off for games. You don't have that social aspect on a certain location that makes a richer game experience. So, I don't know.
I think the game industry has pretty much, it grew too fast, too soon, and outgrew itself. And what you're looking at now is, we saw it pretty much during the economical crash too. And I think like the all the projects that were put down during that time and all the teams everybody heard about, like how one studio was closing down after the other because there was no more money. Right now it's not affecting us, but in 1 year or 2 years it might, because then what happened to all those games that we'd be playing? Well, they're not going to be there, and we don't miss them now, but we will miss them in 2 years. And I think this is, like you're saying, I mean, all this money put out for one game, it's too much. And it is because, like, they talk about, I think the guy who did do the voice for Solid Snake in Metal Gear Solid, was doing something about it on his blog about this too, that, you know, in the computer games industry, it's sort of taken for granted that you do things cheaper and with more work than in Hollywood, because in Hollywood you get paid for your shit. I mean, you do your work and then you get paid. In games, you're supposed to sit there 18 hours a day and do your codes and do everything or whatever. And this is how this industry, it's built on the backs of people who really struggle really, really hard. This is not the case always, of course, but it's really evident, I think, that the games industry has grown too fast in such a too short of a time.
Do you think in that term that working on the outer image of the gaming industry, for instance, there's always this image of the big bad publishers, and people tend to say, no, I don't want to pay for that publisher, but I like the studio. But if I buy the game, I'm paying mostly the publisher. Can the indie scene actually change part of that image? Can they gain as much influence so they have a stronger connection to the community to also enhance the people valuing games again?
I think that for indie games, what we're going to look at is experimental titles and a little bit of retro style and stuff like that. And when we talk about games for the big platforms and the big publishers, when they're involved, it's more of an experience. You know, it's more of a, you live through a story, and it's more of a really grand concept that's really epic. While with indie games, you can't do that because you don't have the resources, you don't have the time, and you don't have the money. So you're going to make a little bit more of the games that people like to play just casually. And of course, then you can't really play or what do you charge so much money for it either. So I think that this might be a good time for these two things to split up to also, like the casual games and the big games. The Hollywood games can do their thing, and games that gamers love can do their thing. And, you know, that could be more of an indie thing where people can contribute and make fun games. And this whole AAA, it's going to be 5 or AAA, whatever, is going to be something else. I think the industry is changing. I don't know when the next console is coming or at all, but I think it's going to be a change there. And in the indie scene is going to take a big part of that, I think.
Well, there are these few exceptions to these casual indie games. We've talked about Wolffire and their Overgrowth project before. And there's also been another very interesting project that I've been following for about 4 or 5 years now, which is called Infinity, The Quest for Earth. Tremendous project. There was, you have to get this, this was one single programmer, I think also from Scandinavia, who had the idea to do seamless transition between space and planetary surface, and had the idea to create an MMO. And like, you know, most MMOs these days are still kind of stuck in the pen and paper age. You have no real-time combat system, but have hotkeys and trigger action that the AI does for you. And he said, well, this is quite boring for MMOs. How about an action-loaded MMO? And while most big companies, big AAA companies say, well, it's technically too complicated or it takes up too many resources, he was trying to achieve this project. So what he did was he created procedural algorithms to create entire planets. Not just entire planets, but entire solar systems. And as soon as he reached that, he got even further and created an entire galaxy. So you have an entire galaxy the size of the Milky Way, and each single star you see in the sky is a solar system that you can actually fly through. And you have a completely seamless transition. You can take your spaceship, you can land on planets, fly through the atmosphere, and it's really AAA graphics, though. It's not like a simplified Mario World type of style. And he's done that as one single person, all the technological base, and then through ModDB and Tezura, gathered more and more creative people around him who were so thrilled with the idea, with this new gameplay opportunity, that they're now trying to achieve this. Of course, this is an exception. He was doing this as a hobby, aside from his regular job. But with your experience, what would you recommend to people? Right now we have plenty of students here who may want to take part in the gaming industry. What would your suggestion be? How should they try to approach an indie project if they really want to, financially and in terms of organization?
Well, of course, financially, you always have like we've pointed out a few times during this talk, that you need money to do something. And you can always do a hobby project in school for a year or two, whatever, and that's fine. Or do it through your whole life and have fun with it. And just look at it as just that, a hobby project that is fun. But if you really want to make a living making indie games, it's going to be a little bit tougher. And then you seriously going to have to talk about, like you say, also project planning and stuff like this. It's going to be, you're going to have to step up to the way you'd really need to get stuff done and not just have inspirations and aspirations to do something. You just really have to get it done and get it down. And if you're a bunch of friends, that's not so easy always, because everybody has a different view and opinion about what needs to be done, how it's going to look, how the gameplay is going to be. And in the end, there's nobody who's going to tap your shoulder and say, like a publisher or whatever, that, and say, okay, guys, 2 months, then you have to be finished. So this is the big problem, I think, with indie games. But I think a lot of the old veterans from the industry is also going indie, because they are, for instance, on this Xbox Live Indie Games, there's a guy and his wife, Nathan Fouts, called Mommy's Best Games, and they've made a few games, and I think they're headed to Xbox Live Arcade too. But he used to work in the industry, and he got sick of it and wanted to make his own thing, because he was sick of the whole thing, and he was sick of being just one little part of a big scheme, and wanted to be the man himself. And he did a really good job at it too, and they released a couple of games, and it's really fun, and they're doing good too. And then there's this guy James Silva, also Xbox Live Indie Games, that got his game The Dishwasher Dead Samurai released in Xbox Live Arcade, and he's making shitloads of indie games on the Xbox Live Indie Games channel and making Xbox Live Arcade title at the same time. So you don't always have to go one way, you can always see it in different ways too. But I don't know. What it all boils down to, I guess, is just ambition to do something and being determined to know where to take it and what to do with it. And like we talked about today, there's so many different platforms. There's so many ways to go. So whatever you feel like doing, and then try as hard as you can. And, of course, talk to people and learn from people who've been in the business too, because it's not something you learn overnight. It's really, it's a war out there.
Well, let's hope our people in here find their chances to get into the industry. There's been a lot of institutes here providing game design studies and also associated professions in the industry. Like there was someone from the Electronic Sports League here, Ibrahim Azari, talking about opportunities associated with gaming industry, not actually designing games, but doing esports stuff. So I think that was a very, very interesting talk, lots to learn about the industry. So take note, people, if you ever want to enter the indie games industry, you know who to ask.
Yeah, that's me. No, not really. But seriously, it's. I think everybody who wants to make games should make games, because there's going to be a big revolution, I think. I don't know how it's going to happen, but I'm definitely sure that everybody's getting more and more computer knowledge, and people are being creative with the computers, getting to know them better from really early up. And I think that games are always going to be part of the human life, and I think that indie games are always going to be very important to everybody. And I mean, yeah, you're going to live your life through them, and you don't even know it yet. So I think, we need to step in that direction.
Okay, thanks a lot to the both of you. It was a very, very cool talk, and I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, thank you too.
Thank you.
Neben diesem tollen Talk haben wir natürlich noch jede Menge weitere Gespräche auf dem Living Games Festival geführt, und wir stellen euch in unseren nächsten Folgen des Pirate Gaming Podcast sämtliche Studenten und Indie-Projekte der Veranstaltung vor und haben auch noch einige weitere interessante Gesprächspartner für den Podcast bereitstehen. Also hört wieder rein.